Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation about the start of the academic year as some students have returned to the classroom while others continue with home-based learning. Joining us on the line now, we have Professor Ganakumaran Subramaniam. He's the head of the School of Education at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Gana, good evening. Now, schools have been closed for the most part of last year, the Ministry of Education has had most of the year to prepare for the start of this academic year. This is our second year into the pandemic. So what do you think we've done to address some of the challenges of blended learning that were identified throughout last year?
First of all, thank you for having me back on the show. I'm delighted to be here and to share some of my thoughts. This is an excellent question. So we've had a year now of this experience, particularly, after we started to try and open schools in July last year, and then we had to shut down again. And there was enough opportunities for us to gather data and learn, from that data from schools in terms of what are the challenges faced by teachers and students and prepare ourselves for this year. And I was quite interested actually to find out. In fact, before school opened, I contacted, heads of schools, and I also contacted friends who were teaching in schools to find out, okay, so how different is this going to be? How different is the new year going to be in terms of returning to school? I mean, this was even before the current shutdown. And I found that generally it remains status quo. This is my, general impression is that the SOP that was given to schools in July last year were handed back to the school again this year, perhaps with minor refreshes. And largely, the responsibility was left to schools to decide how to manage teaching and learning and how to manage, the needs of students. So a phrase that kept repeating itself in that document is, do your best, right? Buat yang terbaik, as it were. So, and my question is, and I thought to myself, and because I also work with one school, I'm chairman of a board of a school, St. Paul's Institution in Seremban, and I asked people in school in terms of how did they prepare themselves and how they're looking forward to the year ahead, and the schools have made their own effort, and this is credit to the school heads and the teachers themselves. And it seems as if a lot more autonomy has been given to schools. But I think, with that autonomy, it needs to come along with guidance. It needs to come along with support. It needs to come along with, ideas of how to deal with this. Because, what we need to understand is this is new. This is new for everybody. And therefore, people need this guidance and need this support in terms of how to manage the situation.
Can I interject? You talk about it, more information and SOPs perhaps created in the early part of the pandemic. Is that data that you talk about, one, publicly available? Two, is it driving policy decisions? I mean, are they collecting information but not actually using it in terms of changing SOPs innovating in terms of how the structure of the school is in order to either deliver the education or to make the schools a safe zone?
Okay, one thing we need to understand is that whatever data that the ministry or the government has collected and the policies that they have come up with, to look forward to, sort of progressing education in 21, this information is not or should not be private just to the schools. It should be a public information so that parents, so that society understand where education is heading. what are our plans? What's going to happen? Rather than you know, just leave it to individual schools to communicate, you know, to their stakeholders or their the parents and the students, and then students and parents then comparing. If they had two children, one child in school A and another child in school B, and they say, you know, how come school A is doing this and school B is not doing this? So I think that there needs to be greater transparency, greater communication to parents in terms, okay, so what is the approach? How are we going to deal with education now? So that there is greater understanding and greater support from parents for this. And what I find now is that the teachers in schools are under tremendous pressure because parents' expectations, or at least the parents who you know, are from the middle and upper bracket, their expectation has risen. You know, I think perhaps out of frustration of lost time of their children's learning.
Right. And speaking about that lost time, Ghana, I want to ask you about that study that was done by Kazana Research in 2018. It found that despite, you know, Malaysian children, despite going to school for an average of 12 years, that they only received 9 years worth of meaningful education. I'm wondering, for the children in school for in 2020 and in 2021 and for the foreseeable future, does that mean that they are going to get less meaningful education than this already dismal number?
That's definite. That's definite. I think it's not just for Malaysia. It's globally, the statistic is there that, you know, this lost time is real. And it is different for different class of learners, meaning, you know, children who come from underprivileged backgrounds are going to lose far more than children who have access to technology, who have access to resources, who are able to, you know, connect and learn in multiple ways, either directly from the school or, you know, through other sources of learning. Because, you know, parents do find other sources for their children to learn, you know, because tuition, for instance, has been, you know, very agile. You know, the whole tuition system has been very agile, and the alternative education system has been very agile, and people have moved online, and tuition is taking place online. And of course, you need to afford it, all these additional alternative learning. And so what research is showing is that children already, you know, before the pandemic, we had disparities in the kind of learning environment. So children with underprivileged background were being left behind. There was a gap. There was already a gap. But now the gap has widened. You know, it has become worse. And statistics tells us in terms of accessibility to the internet, accessibility to, you know, equipment to learn is one of the biggest challenges when we are looking at learning online. Of course,
can I, again to interrupt you, you know, thank you for pointing out the issue of class as it were that affects you know, learning outcomes. What about also culture? And I'm wondering about, many middle class parents have money, but they don't necessarily have the same, you know, educational background or advantages their kids, or they want to give to their kids, and so they might not themselves be able to help their children. I mean, is that also a reality that many middle class parents do not have, you know, the ability to support their children educationally because they themselves, while they're rich now, did not have those advantages growing up?
No, I agree. And I think if we want to make, you know, what we are trying to do a success, there needs to be a greater engagement with the parents. There needs to be greater involvement with educating the parents in terms of how they can support. One thing the pandemic has showed us is that parents are forced to take greater responsibility for their children's learning. Whether it is simply by sharing the devices with their children or sitting down next to them and supporting them through the use of the technology. But what we, I think, have not done enough is engage the parents and see how they can work together with schools, with the system,
Gunnar, who should engage the parents, Gunnar? Is it their job? Does the onus fall on the school and the school administration, or does it fall on the ministry?
I think different levels. I think from the ministry, there needs to be greater information that goes out to the public in terms of how things can be done. There can be, the using of the media, for instance, is a way of reaching out to parents and suggesting to them how they can support their children's learning. But the schools themselves as well need to engage with their parents and identify the problems and offer alternatives or solutions for them. Because as you say, some parents, they think education is important, but they don't know what to do about it.
Gunnar, very quickly, the school, the ministry have decided to dump trial exams. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is there something that's going to be lost in the elimination of trials? Or is this a situation where we can discard all practices that have little value in streamline education?
To me, I really can't understand the rationale behind dropping the trial exam. There are many reasons why the trial is there. It is an exam that is used to benchmark the learners, their learning at certain point, and then use it as a diagnostic to help students to improve, or for the students themselves to identify areas that they need to work on in preparation for the final, for the actual exam. That is an educational rationale for having a trial exam or any exam for that matter. As a kind of a formative diagnostic, a model for improvement of learning. The other aspect I think we need to also think about is that because SPM has been delayed so far, what's going to happen is, students are going to be struggling in terms of how and when they apply into universities. A lot of universities use their trial exam results as a sort of a benchmark to offer students, conditional offers into the university. Without the trial, we are taking away that option. The other thing we are also taking away is that how does the student then, he sits for the SPM exam and he gets his grade, but how does he compare, how does he justify those grades if he does not have other assessments to say, okay, I think something went wrong in my SPM exam because, I seem to have done quite well in other assessments. And the whole of last year, I am quite sure, there were very little assessments to fall back as guidelines in terms of benchmarking or identifying student progress.
Right. Well, Gunnar, excellent points. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. We really do appreciate those insights. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned.